We're told the Northern Tier Symphony Orchestra is dedicated to providing high-quality performances of the world's finest music to audiences throughout the Northern Tier region of Pennsylvania. They tell us as well that the symphony's musicians are integral members of their communities, and very many teach at colleges, universities, and school districts across the area. Among their ranks are players who have performed with the President's own Marine Corps Band, the U.S. Army and Air Force Bands, the New York Philharmonic, Radio City Music Hall, the American Symphony, the New Jersey Symphony, and many more of the country's finest ensembles. Because their concerts in Tunkhannock have been filled to capacity on a regular basis, they've added other venues in Towanda, Honesdale, Hawley, and New Milford. Robert Helmessy is the founding music director and conductor of the Northern Tier Symphony. He conducted the South Orange Symphony for 4 decades, and he was a major conductor of the Eastern Music Festival in Greensboro, North Carolina. He coached many musicians in their careers, including the young Wynton Marsalis, in anticipation of his Grammy Award-winning recording of the Hummel Trumpet Concerto. Robert Helmessy has a master's degree in music from Boston University, a diploma in trumpet from the Juilliard School, and a Bachelor of Music Education degree from Baldwin Wallace. The spring concerts of the Northern Tier Symphony will be offered Friday, April 13th at Blue Ridge High School in New Milford, and again Friday, April 20th at Tunkhannock Middle School. WVIA's Peter Wynn sat down with Maestro Helmessy to learn more.
Looking over the program that you've chosen for your spring concert, if I were to characterize it, I'd call it a pops concert. What made you go in this direction and choose the pieces that you did?
Well, I had a number of pieces that I've wanted to play for years, and I haven't been able to fit them into any of the programs I had. So I decided I'd put them all together and play them and get them off my chest, so to speak. They're very, very good pieces, highly regarded in the music world, but not often heard by symphonic audiences. If you were a band director, you would know the First March, which is Washington Grays, by Claudio Grifola, a Civil War-era band director. And my immediate reaction when I saw the title, I mean, I've known the piece for years, but why Washington Grays when he was an 8th Regiment New York City band director? But the truth is that the name Washington Grays was around long before the Civil War, and the North wore blue, of course, and the Civil War and the South wore gray. But they were wearing gray uniforms, the 8th Regiment band that he conducted back in the 1820s. So that's the reason for the name of the piece. But it's a very difficult march. It's not a typical march with 3 sections and a change of key in the middle. In fact, there's no change of key really at all, except minor to major, and in D. And it's a very interesting march because instead of having 3 distinct sections, he kind of wanders through different thought, almost as though it's program music. It starts out with a very brusque opening, and then it suddenly kind of melts into a tune, like maybe the boys are marching off and one of them's thinking about his girlfriend back home, and something goes through his head, and then, you know, the band director gets him back on with a little short drum beat, and then maybe they're thinking about something else that happened to them. And it keeps alternating between these brusque march-like things and these beautiful little phrases that come in the flute and trumpet and oboe. And then it has what band directors typically call a dogfight, which is a very, very rough section, fast and furious. And it's kind of like in the middle of the march and then settles down into something else. So it has one of those in it, a little short section. And then there's another wistful melody comes in. And gradually it seems like maybe the band director and the marching director of the troops calls them back to task, and they go marching off to glory, or what they've been told would be glory, and usually didn't turn out that way. But it's a very, very good march. And so I put that on the program, and we're going to open the concert with that march, Washington Grays March by Claudio Grifola. The next one, the Victory at Sea, is another one that I remember hearing the initial TV and watching the TV movies. After World War II, they had thousands and thousands of footage of naval operations from the cameramen that accompanied all the battles. And they hired Richard Rodgers, the show composer, to write music because he was the best known composer in the United States at that time that was alive. And he wrote down some themes and some harmonies and turned them over to Robert Russell Bennett, the great arranger, who did a magnificent 13 hours of music to accompany the films, broke them up into half-hour segments, and you can still see them on YouTube if you want to go on and see Victory at Sea. And of course, they used a wonderful orchestra, the NBC Orchestra, which had been Toscanini's orchestra, and this was only just a year or two after he died. They were trying to keep the orchestra together, and it didn't work without him conducting it, but they did manage to get Robert Russell Bennett to conduct it, and he was a wonderful conductor as well as arranger. And he really depicted all the different areas of the world and the campaigns that were fought there, some on land as well as on the sea. And one of the great tunes he arranged was No Other Love Have I, which came a year later in Richard Rodgers' show. And Richard Rodgers actually had the melody down in Victory at Sea, and then he wrote the No Other Love Have I after the composition of Victory at Sea. So that's got some wonderful music in it, and I wanted to play it, and a lot of people don't know it, and maybe they'll go back and watch the TV series if they hear it.
I found it interesting that that No Other Love Than I is really the only piece from the score that I know, and yet when I heard the whole score, I said, well, there's an awful lot here that's worth hearing. And the same with the Grifula. I'd never heard that march before, not being a marching band enthusiast, and was quite intrigued because it is classical variations and so on going on there. It's really a finely wrought piece. And it's wonderful that symphonic audiences or as symphonic audiences are going to get a chance to hear this stuff.
Well, yeah, that's my feeling. It's something I've loved since I first tried to play it when I was in high school and at that time wasn't able to play it. But I was in a band that could play it, and I kind of sat and listened to it, and it was wonderful, and I eventually learned to play it. So that's on there. And then West Side Story is by Leonard Bernstein, of course, the show. And for the people that don't know that, that's written after the Romeo and Juliet story, set in the west side of Manhattan. And you have the family differences between the two families and the two cultures. And Bernstein took the opening of the Romeo and Juliet that Tchaikovsky wrote. The first interval is da-dum, da-dee-da-dee-da-dum. And he made it into Maria, I just met a girl named Maria. And he repeats that interval over and over. And that gave the flavor of the Tchaikovsky to the listener right away without knowing it. In many cases, they didn't realize that's where it came from. But he also used it in da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-da-da-da, that tune, Something's Coming. And so it has a connection. Bernstein always had a connection to both sides of the track, as it were. He loved show music. He loved jazz. He was a wonderful composer. He wrote very, very serious religious music, his mass. And he was just an all-around great musician. And the tunes in this have lasted all this time. Interestingly, he used all the jazz things that were in vogue at the time, the tango and the waltz and things. And they now sound somewhat dated sometimes, but he managed to write such good music that it really doesn't matter. They're wonderful pieces and are strung together. And of course, he ends with the cross rhythm thing that Brahms used all the time, which is 1 2 3 4 5 6 1 2 3 1 2 3 4 5 6 1 2, the cross between 3 and 2. And in America, da 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 da, America, America, and that was the last tune in the arrangement.
Well, of course, this is the centennial of Leonard Bernstein's birth, so there's a great deal of interest in his music right now. I don't know about you, but my favorite score of his is Candide, but West Side Story is certainly the most popular thing he ever wrote.
Candide is interesting because it was written in 16th century counterpoint as part of a mass. The tune, da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-da-da. Something he knew so much music that he could take it and rewrite it, and he'd never realize what it came from, yeah, as well as what he thought of himself.
Well, that's amazing. Now, then, of course, you have Tchaikovsky's the 1812 Overture, and also Ivan Avicii's Waves of the Danube. God, that's a beautiful waltz.
Yes, it is, and in this country, we know it as the Wedding Waltz. I don't know if that's the one that was used in Midnight Kiss, with Mario Lanza back in the 50s, I believe it was, but it's a very popular piece, and it's odd because it's a wedding waltz. Weddings are supposed to be happy, and it's in a minor key. But, you know, that's a musician's thing. We think minor is sad, and often it is. But it's a very interesting waltz, has beautiful melodies, and it was written by Ivanovici, who was another military band director in Romania. And he apparently was very good at composing military band marches and things, and where this waltz came from, no one knows, except that he was born in the Austrian Empire, and, of course, that was the prevailing music. Yeah, he lived until 1890 and was born, I think, in 1812, something like that. So he had a long life as a professional musician, and it's a beautiful waltz.
What I find interesting, too, is that there must be 20 or 30 different themes in it, for want of a better term. They're all variations on that opening theme.
Yeah, the good waltz composers did that. The good Strauss waltzes have that same characteristic. And again, it's like Bernstein taking the melody or the intervals of the melody, the interval meaning the distance between the notes, which gives it a recognizable sound every time it comes back. And in whatever form you write the rhythm, it will be reminiscent of the original melody.
Well, when I suggested that this was something of a pop concert, I wasn't suggesting it isn't good music.
No, I know. It's considered lighter music, and that's part of the reason why it doesn't get played on a lot of symphonic concerts, I think. You try to program things the audience will like. You try to program things that will challenge the orchestra and that they'll enjoy playing. And some music just gets left out sometimes. That's all I can say. There's so much of it. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of pieces. 1812, people need to be aware, it wasn't the American War of 1812. It was the Russians defeating the French and Napoleon. So in 1812, we have the Marseillaise theme, and we have the Russian hymn, and there's another Russian prayer in there, too, worked in. And Tchaikovsky, of course, always wrote thousands of notes, and the joke is his publisher paid him by the number of notes he wrote. But I doubt that's true. He just liked to be voluminous with what he had. He had a lot of ideas, and he had a lot of variations on things. And of course, it's a crowd rouser, and the original piece was written to be played in the square after the victory, and they had cannons set up, and the cannons were wired to the conductor's podium, and he could fire them with buttons or handles when he wanted them. Now they're usually done with deep bass drums, and you hit them right square in the middle, and it sounds like a cannon shot. There are bells in it, the church bells in the end. There was, in the original where they were outside, they had a brass band added to it in the square, and it was a pretty powerful piece, and still is. But it's one of Tchaikovsky's lighter pieces, we can say that, but it's still serious music.
Well, I remember way back in the early 1950s, someone did a recording of it with an actual cannon. I think it was at West Point that they fired off, and then they did it, and they did it with real carillons and so on. So very, very early on.
That was the Minneapolis Orchestra, which now is the Minnesota Orchestra, and they did use the West Point cannons for that. Yeah, they're dubbed in there. Yeah, it was pretty good. That was the first time anybody recorded it that way. I've heard of people, using shotguns into steel barrels, but you really don't want to get into that. But I guess it makes a cannon sound.
Now, I know you often choose repertoire that will display the talents of your musicians, the soloists and things like that. Is that a feature of this concert?
It is. We have a wonderful trumpet section, for one thing. We've always had a good one. We've never had a poor trumpet section. We've been very lucky. But we really have an outstanding one right now, and one of the reasons for never programming the Washington Grays March was because it's very difficult, double-tonguing all up and down the horn from low to high, and we have players who can play that and play it really well. That's one thing. We also have very, very good woodwind players, and we like to feature them, and they get a lot of solos in the West Side Story and in the 1812. And we have a wonderful concertmaster, and he's been featured. Last year we did Swan Lake, and of course he had the big violin solo in that. That's Ian Hipps. And he is a senior in high school now, and he's graduating, and he's going to go to college, and he's going to be a big violinist someday, I'm sure. He's very, very good. He's very good already. And he'll have a short solo in Victory at Sea, which is actually a fiddle tune written in double stops by Robert Russell Bennett, the arranger. Again, he took Richard Rodgers' theme and wrote it in as a fiddle tune. It's kind of cool. So we have that little short thing in there.
Getting back to the Victory at Sea, I think it was what did you say, 13 hours of music? Now, just how many pieces are in the selections that you're going to play?
There are actually so many that I wrote them down. the order is kind of starts with Calm Seas, and then a submarine motive where the oboe plays the Morse code, which was used and still is used in military a lot. Beneath the Southern Cross became No Other Love Have I. Guadalcanal March was a great march, really great march, and he has a very good counterpoint where he writes a tune for the upper instruments, then he writes a second tune for the trombones, and you don't realize until the end of the piece when he puts them together that they work harmonically together. Hmm. It's a really great thing, really fine counterpoint. There's a fiddle in off watch, that's the violin solo I was talking about. Sunny Pacific Islands, The Approaching Enemy, Death and Debris, The Hymn of Victory, and then it ends with the way it started with the high seas and big waves. So there's quite a few representations of the different parts of the world and different campaigns.
So what does it run, about 25 minutes in performance, something like that?
No, it's only 14. It's only 14, yeah. It's short vignettes of the different pieces.
Now you're bringing this particular concert to two different venues this time around?
Yes, we're going to be in Blue Ridge High School in New Milford, and that's on the 13th of April. And then the following week, that's a Friday night, by the way, at 8 o'clock. And the following week, we'll be back in our home base in Tunkhannock at the middle school at 8 o'clock.
You're going to be putting these guys through their paces.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting program. It's interesting to hear the orchestra play jazz. We have to adjust the articulations and the way you play rhythms. I don't know if people realize, but the way a jazz player approaches a rhythm like a dotted eighth and a 16th note, which to an orchestral musician would be bup, 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 bup. The jazz musician will play da, do da, do da, do da, do da, and so forth. And you have all these different articulations, which orchestral musicians are used to reading a certain way, and they have to learn to play them the other way. And it's the same music. It looks the same, but it's played differently.
So that must be a challenge for you, too.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I played some of that back in the days when I was playing trumpet seriously. I played quite a bit of that kind of music, so it wasn't too hard.
Robert Helmessy, music director and conductor of the Northern Tier Symphony Orchestra, speaking with WVIA's Peter Wynn about the spring program to be offered two times by the orchestra, Friday, April 13th at 8 p.m. at Blue Ridge High School in New Milford, and again Friday, April 20th at 8 p.m. at the Tunkhannock Middle School. For more information on the web, northerntiersymphony.org, northerntiersymphony.org. That's two chances to hear the Northern Tier Symphony under the direction of Robert Helmessy, Friday, April 13th at 8 o'clock at the Blue Ridge High School in New Milford, and again Friday, April 20th at 8 at Tunkhannock Middle School. On the web, northerntiersymphony.org, northerntiersymphony.org.